Well, I tell you what, let me jump over to my comments. Now, I mentioned the 2020 election a moment ago. Let me just tell you, folks, I am still burnt by that. I am. Don't think I'm not by what I'm about to say. But this morning I was reading a book that a friend recently gave me. It's designed for use as a devotional or just for reading. And the section that I was in this morning was talking about what it means to have an all-in mentality. That attitude that says that I recognize where I've been and what I'm trying to do now, and I choose to leave nothing on the table. So much so that I'm willing to deny my ability to even retreat. Well, the illustration the author gave was that of Hernan Cortez, who led an expedition to the New World of the Americas in 1519. When he arrived with 600 men and 11 ships, he fully expected hardship and difficulty. But he wanted his men looking forward. So legend has it, he burned the ships so his men could not anticipate going back. I was amazed to read this is not a new phenomenon. I did not know that there's scriptural reference for this. In the Bible, we're actually told that when the prophet Elijah called upon another man named Elisha to follow him, that Elisha was a farmer who then sacrificed his two oxen for a large going-away party and used his plow for firewood to cook the feast. He literally sort of burned his ships, if you will, so he could do nothing but go forward from there. Now, both men, Elisha and Hernan Cortez, they didn't forget their past. I'm sure they drew on their past, but they, sort of forgetting what lay behind, pressed on. Well, listen, conservatives, we have an issue. There is still considered by many to be a usefulness, even now, in focusing on the 2020 election. The problem is, we're 2 years removed from it. We cannot undo the fact that for the past 2 years, Biden has been in the White House. We're not going to change that history. He's been there. And we're also, by the way, not going to change 2020 at this point. So burn the ships on that. Let's push forward so we can make sure the mistakes of the past are not repeated by moving forward, not backward. And the truest way to move backward right now would be to in some way give up on some measure of constitutional protections. Well, I've been a fan of President Trump. I still am. If he's at the top of the ticket in 2024, I'm going to support him again. But yesterday, as the debacle at Twitter came to more light, our former president, whom I greatly respect in many ways, he put out word that if we need to change the Constitution to fix our current presidential situation, we should do it. My friends, we should not. Not for a second believe that resorting to a constitutional fiat is going to make our situation brighter. We have to adhere to our Constitution, and we have to move forward. Ronald Reagan said, "A government big enough to give you everything you need is a government that is big enough to take away everything you have," and that includes liberties, by the way. Well, today I'm hitting on the fact that I believe in what is often referred to as a strict construction of our U.S. Constitution. Some refer to it as the doctrine of judicial constraint, that the Constitution says what it says, that the courts are to be constrained from trying to deviate from the black and white text of the Constitution. So what's the big deal? I mean, Trump says, let's change the Constitution and fix the 2020 elections. Well, it was written over 225 years ago. And those old dudes, they didn't know what we would be going through now. They couldn't see modern life. They might have gotten it wrong. They might have been willing to write it differently. It might mean something different given our times. Hogwash. Let me take it to you this way for a minute. Have you ever gotten that thing, that new device, that new toy, that new product, and it came with instructions, you know, some assembly required? I will never forget the Christmas that Charlene and I gave the kids a real-deal foosball table. Oh, yeah. Not some run-of-the-mill, low-level junk table that blows over in a good wind. No, sirree, Bob. It was a professional grade, worthy of any commercial game room or arcade. Oh, yeah. Of course, it required some assembly. So the folks that designed the foosball table told me how to put together, right? It works best that way. But what if I had had my own notions in the middle of the night when I was trying to get everything ready? How about I put the legs on top? How about put more of the little men on one side than the other? How about if I mix up the colors of the jerseys so each side looks like it has an equal number of red and blues? Don't put the handles on, just the plain bar. Listen, the originators who built the foosball table, they can't see what I see. They can't know what I know. They don't know my kids. They can't see my understanding of fair play. Or can they? You see, they provided instructions for a reason, because they knew that it would go together the right way if I followed the instructions. Well, the Constitution of the United States and its duly passed amendments, such as the first 10 in the Bill of Rights, they are there for a reason. And we don't just suspend them because we're angry about something. We don't. Things like freedom of religion, speech, and the press, the right to bear arms, no requirement to ever have to bear the cost of housing troops in our homes, protection from an unlawful search and seizure, life, liberty, and property, the right to an impartial trial. Listen, all these things and more are vested in our Constitution. If we tamper with even one of those, if we allow one of them to be diluted, if we amend it just to get the upper hand in an election, then the whole thing becomes a house of cards. It's like saying, I believe in everything in the Bible except for that Genesis 1-1 about God created the heaven and the earth. If you don't like Genesis 1-1, the whole Bible becomes suspect. Well, if you don't like the Constitution's adherence right now, you deny it. Next thing you know, the whole thing becomes suspect. The only body that can revise the Constitution is the legislative branch. By virtue of publicly debated amendments, which are then sent to the various states to be ratified, voted on by the state legislatures. 3/4 of the states must agree. 33 times since its creation, the amendment process has been used. 27 times it's succeeded. In other words, not even every time works. And that process is so important. It's sacred. If we allow the courts to simply say, well, we don't like that provision about bearing arms or state rights or free speech, and we make those changes from the bench, then the rights, the actual rights of citizens, are immediately all in jeopardy. Listen, too often these days, liberals want to put their agenda forward, but oftentimes it's that good old firewall called the Constitution that keeps us a free nation. They can't get around it. I mean, unless they come down to the point that they pack the court with liberal justices who refuse to be bound, justices who believe the Constitution is a living document meant to be interpreted. No, it's not supposed to be. And it's not supposed to be for Republicans either. So we should not stand for one of our own calling for a change in the Constitution merely to suit a matter of great inconvenience, or for that matter, even for disenfranchisement. We don't just willy-nilly call for it. It doesn't work that way. By God, no, not for a second. Our founders knew what they were doing. As surely as the company that manufactured that foosball table for me knew that it would work well if I followed the instructions, our founders knew what they were doing. And conservatives, listen, y'all, we also know. We know that every branch of government must be preserved by the support and the maintenance of conservative caretakers. In this case, conservative judges. Judges who take the role seriously and are determined to uphold the Constitution. To fiercely interpret it as a document that the courts have no right to change on their own, that no candidate for election can demand be changed for their benefit, no right to interpret it any differently than what it actually says. I'm a conservative. Defined in part because I believe that the rights we have are inalienable. They are written in our Constitution. They are sealed by the efforts of generations before us. And I'm a conservative because I believe that the day that we water down the Constitution and make it malleable and permeable and mashable, that we cease to be a nation in which people are free as a matter of right. I'm a conservative, and I believe in upholding the Constitution strictly and with constraint. We need to burn the ships on the idea of undoing 2020's awful election. It was awful. Make no bones about it. But we're not going to sit around continuing to rehash 2020. We're so far down the road, we've got to get fixated on 2024. We've got to move forward. The goal here is that we move forward and fix the problem in a manner consistent with our founders' intent, not with changing the election to redo something we can't go back and fix now. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. All right. Well, we'll see how many of y'all I made mad. But the reality is this. Yeah, 2020's election sucked. And don't tell me it wasn't rigged in some places, that it wasn't wrong. I get it. I totally get it. But the reality is we're 2 years past it now. We're over the hump. We're halfway to the next election. It is time for us to burn the ships. Talk of changing the Constitution to go back and fix 2020, not going to happen. And it shouldn't happen. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. So looking over at the text line real quick, I see I got one back from JT from Lacey Springs. Says, I agree with the monologue, except for the assembly of the foosball table. Says, reminds me of the play kitchen for my granddaughter to soon assemble 80 pieces and 150 various fasteners. Yep, good luck to you, brother. Blessings on it. Missy from Falkville, let's see what she says. She says, I do not agree with Trump and what he said about the Constitution, but do we continue to allow the Democrats to manipulate our election procedures to the point where a Republican can never be elected again? Or are we there already? Some believe we are. Okay, and Missy, I get that. That's why I'm saying we got to move forward. The idea that the call should be to go back and change 2020, we can't negate the fact that Biden's been in there writing executive orders now for the last 2 years. It is time for us to get ready to take it back in a manner that is consistent with our Constitution. And yes, I agree. We've also got to make sure that the procedures, the laws, everything's in place so that we don't have a repeat of some of the junk we had in 2020. I got somebody held on during the break, so I'll grab that. Is that Jeff from Indiana? What are you doing calling in so early, man?
Got a comment on your the first thing you said there, you know.
The monologue.
The monologue. I couldn't. Words escape me sometimes.
What do you think about it?
But the one thing that doesn't escape me is that you don't have any constitutional rights.
Oh,
the only constitutional rights are granted to you by God, but unless the government enforces them, good luck with that.
You know, I am. Okay, so I have constitutional rights. There's no way you can say I don't have constitutional rights, but I agree they have to be enforced. That's the issue. You're exactly right.
Yeah, it's just like if I went out and if some member of my family was murdered, and the prosecutor decides not to prosecute, and the federal prosecutor decides not to prosecute, even though a murder is illegal, they got away with murder. Or basically, it's okay then.
Well,
and that's what it boils down to.
You know what, though? The reality is, but staying on the topic that we're on with the elections were whacked. Yeah. The Constitution says the election laws should be administered and actually put in place by the state legislatures. There were times they weren't, and there were things we know were wrong, and there were finding out more and more about Twitter suppression, and who knows what Facebook and Google did to help. But all that to say, I mean, do you agree? We can't go back now and undo 2020. We can just make sure it doesn't happen again in 2024.
Yeah, but I mean, that's true. But the thing about it is, this was an unconstitutional election because election laws were changed by people who did not have the power to do so.
I agree. Had
there been enough people changed to make the outcome different, then we had an illegal election.
Well,
even if it wasn't though. They still did it the wrong way, and we should have had an election do-over, actually, because, I mean, if you don't follow the rules, then it should have been null and void and called for another election.
Well, I don't disagree with that. I think the whole thing was whacked. I think it was jacked up. I think the sentiment that created the January 6th riot at the Capitol, notice I didn't say insurrection because it was a riot. But I think that was all driven by the fact that there were so many things that were just being, you know, done incorrectly or done illegally. But the reality is, I think we all need for President Trump, who right now is still the top of our ticket on the red side, that we all need for President Trump to stop calling for the undoing of a previous election. It's just we can't get there now. We're 2 years down the road. Let's make sure that we're doing it right for 2024.
Yeah, I mean, Trump's, I love the man, but he's toast. I mean, he's come out with so many whack things and this stuff that I don't think he could be elected again. You know, and I'm a Trump supporter, you know, above anybody else. But you got to look at what's going on, and is he going to, you know, it doesn't do any good to support him if you can't even beat Joe Biden.
All right, brother.
I got the
music playing. That means the heartbreak's on me. Hey, be safe on the road. It's a messy day out there, man.
Yes, it is.
All right,
we'll
see you, Jeff.
Have a good one.
All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, coming back with number one, taxation fixation. We'll be right back. Hey, all you right side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. I'm talking about this show goes down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. Hey, listen, a couple things real quickly. So as to the monologue, I got a text here from John from Huntsville. John says, tell Jeff from Indiana, I totally agree with what he said to Dale Jackson this morning about not having constitutional rights, even though Dale Jackson's a little hard on you. I'd like to say, Jeff from Indiana, you are awesome. So Jeff from Indiana's got groupies. That's John from Huntsville texting in on that one. And then one of my followers on Twitter, in response to what I just, either that or he's replying to something I may have tweeted about this. Anyway, with regards to President Trump's call on the Constitution, and here's the actual quote, by the way. This is the quote from Trump. A massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. It's pretty clear, but my follower, who I typically have always agreed with, he goes by a vision leader on Twitter. It's the piece he posted says, Donald Trump was not suggesting to terminate the Constitution. What he actually said was, the election fraud of 2020 was so massive and of such magnitude that it canceled and thus allowed the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. Nowhere, it says, did Donald Trump even remotely suggest doing away with the Constitution. He was defining how the massive fraud of the 2020 election negated the Constitution. I disagree. I don't think he was saying that at all. I think what he's saying right now, and by the way, he's the freaking former president of the United States and a billionaire and somebody with a Ivy League education. He needs to learn how to phrase things better if that's the case, because what he tweeted out did not at all sound like what was just being said here at Vision Leader. So the reality is this. I think what he was literally saying, unless he wants to come back and refute his own statements, I don't need what somebody else says they think he said. I'm looking at it. It's in quotes, and it says, now that they're uncovering fraud basically at Twitter and all that, it should allow for the termination of all the rules, regulations, articles, even those found in the Constitution. That's the way I'm seeing this. It's in quotes, and I'm not – anyway, bottom line is I think Trump was saying, let's change the Constitution so we can fix what happened in 2020, and I think that's a bad idea. Bad idea. If he wants to come out with a statement denying it later on, I'd love to see it, and he probably will. Then again, when is he doesn't do that very often, so we'll see. Daniel from Tullahoma, Tennessee just sent something in, but it's blank. I don't know what that is on the text line. So it just has a blank. I've never seen that happen before. How do we get blanks like that? Okay. If you want to text in, by the way, 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text the show. We'll go through them as we go. Right now, I'm jumping to the first part of the Triple Dipper because I've got Andrew Sorrell calling in top of the hour to kind of cap it off for me. Oh, by the way, Boomer, you ought to go ahead and flick on your camera there, bud, because there's a whole box.
There's a
whole box. Whole box of fat pills sitting on your desk.
Oh, yes.
Bro, I got you a half a dozen of normals and a half a dozen of
chocolate glaze. We got some donuts. So, in the studio today.
So coming up in the next hour, I'll be doing push-ups while Boomer's eating donuts because I missed it by like
just a hair,
just a margin, just a shave tail,
just a shave.
Anyway, I'll be doing push-ups. Boomer's eating donuts,
and it will be on the live stream.
And it will be on the live stream. That's right, at rightsideradio.org. You can see it. Boomer's got a box of fat pills. All right, number one on the Triple Dipper, taxation fixation. Had somebody tweeted in or texted in earlier. Who was that? Was it, now I'm trying to look back and see who that was, and I apologize. It may have been Tyler. It was Tyler from Huntsville. Says, I could have sworn I've heard these dippers before, LOL. And I said, old titles, fresh material. He said 10-4. The first one I'm doing, taxation fixation. As a reminder, we are in a budget surplus. I'll cover that more in a minute. But we are in a massive budget surplus. As a reminder, I know that some of that surplus is related to a massive influx of one-time federal dollars related to COVID relief, which we still haven't spent. However, even without those COVID relief dollars, revenues to the state of Alabama have increased by $1.5 billion beyond expectation. We have $1.5 billion surplus right now. We have so much of a surplus, by the way, that last legislative session, the legislature had to hold an additional budget meeting to have what they called a supplemental appropriation bill because they had excess funds available to spend. How much of it have you seen back, individual citizens? How much have y'all seen back? Raise your hand if you've gotten tax relief in Alabama, because you haven't. Story here from the taxfoundation.org. You hear how, that's a thick one. You hear that? It's like womp, womp, womp. All right. Story here from the Tax Foundation. Among the 46 states that held legislative sessions this year, structural state tax reform and temporary state tax reform were recurring themes. Most state sessions are now complete. This story, by the way, came out in July. It says individual income tax rate reductions have been enacted by 10 states. Individual. That's Georgia, Idaho, Indiana, Iowa, Kentucky, Mississippi, Nebraska, New York, South Carolina, and Utah. Colorado may just have passed a ballot measure, I'm not sure, to do that even still, and Oklahoma may yet. Corporate income tax has been, or reductions have been enacted in 6 states, Idaho, Iowa, Nebraska, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, and Utah. Did I read out Alabama? No. All right, we also have the fact that Kansas and Virginia lawmakers decided to permanently exempt their groceries from the state sales tax base. Illinois and Tennessee chose to temporarily suspend their sales tax on groceries. You've got Connecticut, Florida, Georgia, Maryland, New York enacted the gas tax suspensions. Illinois delayed a tax increase in order to not bring additional burdens on their citizens during a crisis. States like Connecticut, Florida, New Jersey, and Tennessee have put in major state sales tax holidays, while 11 states, California, Colorado, Delaware, Georgia, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Maine, New Mexico, South Carolina, Virginia, chose to issue rebates to its taxpayers. That's all this year. What did Alabama do? They spent more. That's what Alabama did. And what did they spend it on? Government. Well, for the love of God, are we or are we not a Republican-led state? Well, you know, the other day we had soon-to-be Speaker of the House, Nathaniel Ledbetter, was in studio. And he said he really does believe there are going to be some tax relief measures on the next legislative agenda. And there need to be. And folks, the reason why I'm doing this, the reason why I'm bringing in fresh material to try and talk through this topic is because we have got to contact our state legislators. There's a couple of things out there that they are reluctant to do. It's like, I don't know what the deal is, but it's like pulling a tooth without Novocaine. They are trying desperately not to give any tax relief. And they're trying desperately not to do something to fix schools through school choice. I mean, at what point do they not see that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result? I mean, I'm looking at things. There's creative ways to do this, like looking at the same article here. Kentucky. So Kentucky passed House Bill 8, and it uses revenue triggers to reduce the individual income tax by a half percentage point in years in which the triggers are hit. In other words, what they did was they said, okay, if the state has X amount of funds, that year the taxes go down. If it has even more funds, they go down even further. They put revenue triggers in place. You know what? That's something. It's not like immediate. I would love to see them just go ahead and do a blanket cut. But you know what? I applaud the creativity. I applaud them saying, yeah, we're worried about, you know, not having enough, so we'll go ahead and we'll just go ahead and say that if the revenue triggers hit, then we'll lower taxes. We sure will. And they put that into law. They signed off on it. How about Mississippi, though? Mississippi, under Governor Tate Reeves, is eliminating, they did this, eliminating its 4% individual income tax bracket altogether on January 1st of this coming year. It's gone. If you're in the 4% bracket, it's gone. And that'll transition the state to a graduated income tax structure to a flat rate of 5%. The flat rate is scheduled to decrease to 4.7 in 2024, 4.4 in 2025, and finally 4% in 2026. It's a complete restructuring. It's comprehensive tax reform in Mississippi. They are making it easier to be a citizen of the state. Now, some will say, But Alabama has the lowest property taxes in the nation. I know we do, and we still have $1.5 billion in surplus. So here's a couple of things. Alabama, I am very proud of the fact that Alabama has a balanced budget requirement in its constitution. So they have to balance the budget every year. We can't do deficit spending like they do in Chicago or in Illinois or some states like that. We can't do it. We have to. But what they used to always do was just over budget on purpose, and then wait and see whether it'd be a middle of the year proration. Proration means halfway through the year, the governor looks at revenues, realizes we're not going to make it, and he has to cut the budget in the middle of the year and prorate the budget. Well, proration is painful. And by the way, whenever you give state employees a raise, my recollection was you cannot prorate their pay. You can only prorate services and capital expenses. So what that means is all of a sudden budgets get slashed in the middle of the year. Well, so here's one statement for you. I used to always say this on the campaign trail. If your budget prorates in the middle of the year, it was never balanced to begin with. So there's that. But then the other thing that I'll say is, if you as a government have a budget surplus, that means you took more from the taxpayers than what you needed. Now, I get it when it's a year, like wow, we had a great year. Didn't see that coming. And we did. We instituted some reforms when I was in the legislature, balanced the budgets for the first time in years, and got them really in line. You haven't seen proration now since we took charge of the State House in 2010, which is great. But at the same time, we did some things and put some measures in place that dramatically increased the ability to streamline and put efficiencies into the collection of revenues. And so now we're seeing that paying off. But at some point, when you do that, you look at it, the first year is like, oh, great. Wow. Whew, it worked. And look, we had some extra left over at the end of the year. What a novel thing, because Alabama hadn't had that in a long time. But when you start doing it year after year, then it's time to start giving it back. Because your only alternative is to spend it on government or to give it back to the people from whom you took it. And right now what we're seeing is a great reluctance on the part of legislators to dare giving some back. I'm looking at this report. I'm not going to go into all the different states, but I can just tell you right now, if you picture the map, here's Alabama sitting square in the center of the Southeast. Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, all ringing around us, stacking on top of us, to our left, to our right, to our north, to our south, all of them did major tax reforms and refunds and rebates to their people, and Alabama hasn't done squat on that. And we've got to. If we're going to maintain our status as a truly red, not a purple, but a red state, then some measurable tax reform has to take place. Boomer, I tell you what, man, take us to the break. We'll come right back and move this thing forward. I got a piece here you're going to want to hear about cash-rich states, and I've got another one that came from 1819, or about maybe Alabama should strive to be more like Mississippi. You don't see that headline very often. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Sitting here in the studio with the new Christmas tree and a box of donuts. Man, it's a good day.
That's a good day.
It's hard not to have a good day when you got a Christmas tree and a box of donuts, man. That's just good stuff right there. I'm keeping on with this topic we're on right now, taxation fixation. CNBC, Phil, did you go to CNBC? Yes, I did. All right, story that came out earlier this year. pointed out that in 2021, state revenues across the board grew by 14.5%. That's across the board. It's not like Alabama just had it going on. We did. But literally what's happened is there were people who were being paid. I mean, a lot of times what they're seeing is there's a cash influx to the economy. People are being sent money. They're being paid not to work. It was literally I know some of y'all are going, I didn't see mine, but the reality is there was more cash in people's pockets during the pandemic than had ever been expected to happen. And as a result, people had more spending power, and so they began buying. And then, of course, you've also got the fact that a lot of folks sat at home, got bored, got on Amazon. So, I mean, that happened. Credit card debt did go up. There was a lot in the economy that had not been expected during the pandemic. So that being said, across the board, 14% increases. AP News has a story that came out in the tail end of August of this year. And it starts off by pointing out that Missouri devised a $500 million plan to send one-time tax refunds to millions of its households. In a shock to some people, Republican Governor Mike Parson vetoed it. You know why? Because he wanted a bigger, long-lasting tax cut. In Parson's words, he said, "Now is the time for the largest income tax in our state's history," Parson declared as he called for lawmakers to come back into a special session to consider a $700 million permanent tax reduction. You're not hearing that from Governor Ivey. You're not hearing that from our current legislature. Right now, there is discussion by some, and I appreciate it. I know Senator Orr from Decatur has been on this more than anybody, saying that we've got to do something, whether it be a tax rebate. Most recently, I believe his comments said that we're looking at the possibility of a tax rebate and some form of measurable tax relief, you know, comprehensive tax relief. I don't know what that would mean yet. My hope is that they will either fully or partially eliminate the grocery tax and, oh, by the way, provide rebates. I think that would be considered, you know, a win. But what's happening is the bureaucrats in Montgomery can't stand the idea of someone saying you're not going to have as much money in government because we're going to give some back to the people. Well, Justin Bogey, who's been on the show multiple times, friend of mine that works at the Alabama Policy Institute, he's their fiscal analyst. He wrote a piece that came out 3 days ago. It's titled, "When It Comes to Tax Relief, Alabama Should Strive to Be More Like Mississippi." You don't hear that title very often. But earlier this month, it says Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves announced that he would pursue further income tax cuts in the upcoming legislative session. I mean, that's after all they've already done. In 2022, it says they enacted legislation in Mississippi to eliminate the state's 4% income tax bracket, which I told you about a moment ago. Reeves feels the state government should press forward in efforts to take less and less from Mississippians. Alabama, Justin points out, wrapped up 2021 with a $1.5 billion revenue surplus, and in 2022, it's already collected more taxes from Alabamians, finishing the fiscal year with a $2 billion revenue surplus. Wow. So over the last 2 years, $3.5 billion in surplus funds. And we're also still sitting on another $1 billion in federal stimulus funds that have not yet been allocated. The difference is what Alabama, Justin says, is doing with the excess tax dollars it took from you. What has Alabama state government, he says, done to take less taxes from citizens? Well, it's done the bare minimum. And one thing it did do, in 2022, they like to say they passed $160 million in targeted tax cuts. Half of those savings came from them just deciding not to tax you on your COVID relief dollars. Well, that's great. I mean, I'm glad. I remember calling for that myself here on the show. I'm glad. But don't call it a tax cut. All you did was go, you know what, that thing you've never had before? Our tax code would allow us to tax it, and so we're not. Thanks, guys. Appreciate you. That is good. But don't go claiming, we saved $160 million to the taxpayer. No, you literally agreed not to tax what you should have never taxed in the first place. Okay, then it also says that when gas prices peaked early this year, Governor Kay Ivey balked at the idea of suspending the state gas tax, unlike our neighboring states. Nothing has been done, it says, to combat near-record inflation. None of the state's latest $2 billion revenue surplus has been spent. The remaining $1 billion in American Recovery Plan Act stimulus dollars has also not been spent. All right, listen, we're not alone in this. Other states have got to make decisions, but right now, the frustrating thing, as we head to the break, the frustrating thing for me is knowing that We never had surpluses in the past, and now that we do, it's like they're in a depression mentality and they can't let go. They've got to recognize that the people of the state are where they got it from. It's time to bring some of it back. Coming up next, our new state auditor, Andrew Sorrell, going to be on the phone with us, and we'll talk through it with him. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live on the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all of the issues. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. We're going to the phones right now. I'm still in number one of the Triple Dipper. I'm calling this whole section of the show the taxation fixation. And how we basically have, we've seen all of our neighboring states and a lot of our other, you know, non-neighboring states, not contiguous to us, enacting some pretty major tax reforms. Some have been comprehensive reforms that'll be lasting. Some have been just, you know, rebates. Others have been suspensions or tax holidays. I mean, Florida put in multiple sales tax holidays throughout the year to give a boost to the brick-and-mortar economy. And I'm just looking at it going, what the heck, Alabama? I mean, I can remember when I got in, we were fighting just to bring the budgets online back in 2010. For the whole first quadrennium, we were fighting the deficits that had been left behind by Democrats. As we stabilized that, it's almost like they don't remember what it took to get us to the point that we have the ability to garner a surplus, and now they won't give it back. Well, listen, I'm bringing somebody on the air right now who has served in the Alabama State House, Andrew Sorrell. Most recently was a representative serving House District 3 from up here in North Alabama. He has most recently been elected to be the next state auditor for the state of Alabama, so he is auditor-elect, Andrew Sorrell. And without further ado, let me just bring him on the show. Andrew Sorrell, how you doing, man?
Phil, I'm doing great. Always good to be on Right Side Radio.
Hey, thanks, buddy. I appreciate that, and thanks for making yourself available to us. Hey, so let me ask you your thoughts. I mean, I know for a fact that when you were in the legislature, you would be considered a fiscal hawk, very conservative. Sometimes you were the only one actually saying no or yes to the right things. That being said, what are your thoughts on the current state of the legislature, whether it's ever going to see any real measurable tax reform?
Well, I like our odds better now than I have the last 4 years, I'll tell you that. I think we've seen someone elected majority leader in the House who I have a very high opinion of. I think Scott Stadhagen is serious about giving some money back to the people, the taxpayers, where it originally comes from. But the last 4 years, I almost felt like it was kind of a wasteland for conservatism in the Alabama State House. And I'm disappointed to say that, but it's the truth. Did we pass some good things? Yeah, we did. We passed constitutional carry. We passed some transgender sports bills, some transgender surgery bills. We got some of those conservative hot-button issues done. But where we failed, more so than in any other area, was on the fiscal side of policy. Now, I know that you were a foundation fellow. You went through the Club for Growth Foundation program, and
right.
You studied this in depth for weeks there. I've applied to that program as well. Hope I get in this year. But if you look at the Club for Growth scorecard, which only does fiscal, they only grade fiscal issues, the average Republican in the state House scored a 28 this year. And that's with me scoring a 95 and bringing the average up. We did not do any meaningful tax cuts or tax reform. In fact, we did the exact opposite. We passed a gigantic, the largest tax increase in Alabama history that's ever actually passed. Not the largest to have been proposed, but the largest to actually pass was the 10-cent gasoline tax that continues going up forever. Every 2 years, it goes up even more. So this in an era where we have record-setting budgets. Our education budget was up 16% last year. Our general fund budget up 8% last year. If you compare that with the popflation rate, which is the population growth plus the inflation rate, we are growing government faster than we should be in Alabama. In fact, as Club for Growth correctly noted, we are actually growing government faster than the state of California right now.
Yeah, that's an amazing statistic, and I have heard that before. The Policy Institute has put out some information on that same thing, and it's just when you read that, it almost makes you cringe. But let me ask you this: as we move forward, you're looking at taking the office of state auditor when you're sworn in January, and I know the state auditor does not necessarily, you know, affect the budgets or for that matter, you know, has the opportunity to pass tax reform, but you do bring a level of accountability. What do you see based upon your beliefs and where you stand in terms of being fiscally accountable? How does that translate? And do we see anything coming out of your tenure as an auditor that will impact the things you and I are talking about right now?
I hope what you see coming out of my tenure, obviously I don't have a vote in the legislature anymore, but what I do have is a voice, and I have a statewide platform to talk about the issues that I care about. And people expect people like the state auditor and the state treasurer to voice their opinion on the Alabama budget. I think it's a very appropriate thing for the state auditor to comment on the budget. And what I see is states like Mississippi working to completely eliminate their state income tax, and all I see Alabama talking about is a lousy one-time rebate. That's not good enough. Not in an era where we have, again, record-setting budgetary growth. We have the internet sales tax has come on after the Quill decision at the Supreme Court level. That is causing a huge increase in taxes. We haven't eliminated the grocery tax in Alabama, one of the few states to not get rid of that. So we need to do, I think all of the above is the correct approach. I support a one-time rebate. I support a income tax cut. And we need to inflation adjust our tax brackets, because there's bracket creep going on where, you know, if a bracket starts at 50,000, well, as inflation continues to rage at 8%, 50,000 is less and less money. So there's bracket creep, and you're paying a higher tax rate than you were in previous years for the same amount of inflation adjusted wages. Nobody's talking about any of these issues right now in Montgomery. And I hope that I'm not the only one the next 4 years addressing them, but if that's what it takes, I will. I'll be all over talk radio. I'll be doing interviews with anybody that'll listen to me about how we need to reform our state's budgetary process.
Well, I mean, you know how to put us on speed dial, so there's that. But let me just like sort of segue off some things you just said right there. So as we look at other states doing what they do, you just finished saying you do support an all of the above, a rebate, some comprehensive reform, and some others. And one of the arguments that you constantly hear back is from those who are resistant to the idea of tax reform is, well, Alabama's got the lowest property taxes, and that's the reason why we can't, you know, do away with revenue in other places. Your thoughts on that?
Well, you just look at how much we have coming in versus how much we need to fund state government. I think that state government's already overfunded. You know, I don't see other people talking about, well, I don't know if we can afford to cut back, or we can't cut back more than the inflation rate or whatever. No, listen, we need to cut government at all, especially at the federal level. But trust me, there's plenty of waste going on at the state level. And you probably experienced this when you were in the legislature as well. But anytime you introduce a bill that's going to right-size state government, it's incredibly difficult. You know, we can't pass bills to get Alabama out of the liquor business. And by the way, Alabama loses money. Only the government could sell alcohol at a loss, right? And they'll tell you they're making a profit, but that's because they're including the sales taxes on the liquor, which the state would collect those taxes, whether the state was selling it or whether a private company was selling it. You subtract the taxes out, we're losing money selling alcohol in Alabama, right? We're losing money on legal notices in newspapers. We pay millions of dollars a year, and the counties and municipalities pay this too. Huntsville spent $110,000 in 2018 on legal notices and newspapers. All of that could be put on the Secretary of State's website for free. I even had John Merrill agreeing to do it if I could pass my bill. Legislature really doesn't seem very interested in cost-saving measures. What I would like to see is somebody in the House or Senate put together a panel of people who are like, okay, how can we save Alabama money? And we need to do a small government day in the legislature. You know, we do all these themed days, the Veterans Day. We're going to pass a bunch of bills to help veterans, and all that's wonderful. Let's do a small government day. Any bill that repeals any previously passed law that needs to come off the books, or any bill that cuts taxes or reduces government spending. Those are the only bills that make it to the floor that day. Wouldn't that be refreshing to see?
that'd be a whole new day. It almost sounds like an oxymoron to say that government has a small government day. But yeah, I mean, I totally get it. And yes, I agree. I think that needs to happen. Now, what I hope is going to happen is that you're going to wind up having sort of an agenda that you'll publish in advance so that we can see the kind of things you're working on, because I think that your incoming office is probably one of the least appreciated and little known in state government, but you are there for the sole purpose of providing accountability to the taxpayers as to the things that Alabama spends money on and or owns. Am I correct?
So you're absolutely right. So people don't understand what the auditor does. The auditor right now tracks the state's property. It's $1.2 billion worth of property. You basically make sure it's not walking away. It's not growing legs and walking away. And 1% of our state property every year actually does go missing. But let me give you an example of some other things the state auditor should be doing. So, for instance, the financial account audits are done by the examiners of public accounts right now. So they're going to come in, they're going to take a county commission's books, and they're going to make sure that the money really went where they said it was going. Well, even if you pass that audit, quote unquote, no one's auditing the books to see, okay, we spent $70,000 on an automobile. Could we have purchased a used one for $44,000 that would have done the job just as well? We're not doing that kind of auditing at all in Alabama.
Yeah.
And I would love to take that on as a state auditor. I will beg the legislature for that duty. Let me review state government spending and suggest ways where we can save money.
That's a novel concept, brother. I hope you understand that. You're speaking an alien language in a foreign land when you do that. So, we'll see. All right. So I guess let me ask you this then. You're taking office in January. Around the same time, the legislature will be going into its first session of the new quadrennium. About a third of the legislature is new. So that being said, if you had to predict whether there would be any tax relief in this coming session, what is your prediction?
What you're going to see is a one-time rebate. And the reason I say that is because that's what will be easiest to get through. That's what the governor will support. That's what, you know, House leadership is most likely to support. Now, that's not what I want to see. I think a one-time rebate, that does nothing to address the growth of government in future years. That just kind of takes – trust me, there will be enough money for a one-time rebate and for them to still grow state government in Alabama in 2023, I guarantee you. But if you're asking for my prediction of what's going to happen – that's what I think. I think you'll see an across the board rebate.
Okay. Well, I would bet that if I had to lay odds on something happening, that would be what I would bet would happen too. And all right. Well, listen, Auditor Elect Andrew Sorrell, thanks so much for spending time with us today. We're going to have you back on probably multiple times. Look forward to it.
Hey, always enjoy coming on. Appreciate the invitation. Look forward to giving an update on. Maybe my first few weeks in the auditor's office next spring.
All right, sounds good. We'll see you.
Thanks.
All right, Boomer, take us to the break, brother. We'll do that right now. I'm gonna call a lid. I'm borrowing a Biden term. I'm calling a lid on the number one of the triple dipper. We're gonna come back from this, and hey, brother, I think I owe you some push-ups.
Yeah, maybe just a few. We'll see right now.
Just a few, and you get to eat donuts, and I get to do some push-ups. So let's get her done.
All right.
All right, we'll be right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right, making it cool to be a conservative. Well, hey, Boomer.
Yeah.
I owe you some push-ups.
You know, we did not hit the 100,000 mark when you said. You know, it's only fair. Now, I'm just hoping that we get to it before the end of the week, so then I don't have to do the push-ups.
That's true. Yeah, so for those who don't...
And bring in more donuts.
For those who don't know, Boomer and I have had a running bet on when we would hit 100,000 downloads of the podcast. I swore up and down we were going to have it by the end of November, And I was off by, what, 2,500-ish?
About 2,500-ish, yes. Yeah. Just right in there. So close.
So where are we right now?
We're at 98.4,
I think.
98.4, yes.
98,400 just today.
Today.
All right. All right. So the deal is this. The bet was if I was wrong, if I was wrong, if I missed my mark, I had to do push-ups while Boomer got to eat donuts, and he picked his donuts.
I did. I got to pick my donuts, the chocolate covered.
Chocolate covered and what you call the normal.
Chocolate covered and normal.
So at this point, I owe push-ups. You get to eat donuts while I'm doing push-ups. But the thing is, though, bud.
I know.
You've got till the 10th.
I got till the 10th. Saturday. So
Boomer picked the 10th as his date.
I did. So y'all just start listening to these podcasts. And then I'll feel really good that I chose the right date.
All right. Well, I'm doing push-ups right now.
You got to tune in right to therightsideradio.org and look at the live stream. And this is also recorded, so y'all can come back and watch it.
Come back and watch.
Yeah.
Me do
so
push-ups,
you know, well, you know what? You know, I'm going to try to even video it and record it and just splice it and put it on our Instagram too. And
God,
you know, just
almighty,
keep, you know,
stop.
Just keep posting it everywhere. So just for everybody, just to enjoy
that
this
is,
moment with me, right?
That is just awful. That is awful that you would act that way. I'm getting down, like my drill sergeant did, I'm getting down the front lean arrest to beat my face.
So here I go. What would they say to you in the Army? What do they say?
Oh, they'd say, get in the front lean arrest, maggot.
Get in the front lean arrest, maggot.
And I get down. You do push-ups till I say I'm tired. Roger that, sergeant.
Till I get tired.
Do one for Chesty Puller. Arr!
So while he's doing his push-ups, I'm going to go on and push this over here so everybody can watch, obviously. So it is on the live stream right now, so everybody can watch. Now, Phil is actually in his push-up positions. I'm gonna eat donuts while he is doing his push-ups. So y'all can watch him do his push-ups while I'm eating a donut. So sorry if you hear me chomping on my donut while I'm talking to you, but it is really good at the same time. And look at his form, everybody. I mean, it looks pretty amazing. I mean, there's not many people that get to tell a colonel to do push-ups. And I'm sitting here eating a donut while he's doing push-ups. So, I mean, I hope everybody will be able to at least watch it right now or tune in later to watch it. Man, you're really busting those out. Are you breathing? Man, I mean, he's doing a lot of them. I don't even know how many he's done. I should have been counting. Whoa, he just knocked out 50 push-ups, guys. Whoa.
That was
one for each decade he's been alive, he says. That was pretty remarkable.
Oh.
That was pretty remarkable.
Lord. I'm going to get over here and breathe hard in the microphone now.
Breathe hard in the microphone.
How are those donuts?
I'm still eating my donut. It's really good. Would you like one?
No. I just burned off all the calories. I don't like You get to eat the fat pills while I catch oxygen.
I was eating the fat pills tonight, but they are delicious.
But I did. That was 50.
Oh, hey, thank you.
Thank you.
Good.
I love you, brother, even though you won the stinking bet.
that was pretty great. Now I'm just going to pray that everybody listens and I don't have to do my 50 push-ups now.
No.
I don't have to double it, I hope.
I don't know. I think your date was the 6th of December. I think as the host of the show, I get to revise the date.
You get to revise my date.
No, you got to the 10th, man. And I think we're going to make it. I think we're going to make it.
That was good.
All right. Well, I was like, my pecs are now swollen. We're going to go to a break.
You feel real swole
right now? Yes, with bowling balls just to make them heavier.
That was great. It was a good time. You got to breathe a little bit more, though.
I'm good.
57
Guys, that was years old.
Awesome. So y'all got to tune in and check that out.
All right, we're on it, folks. I'm done. I paid my debt to society. All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We are going to come right back. Number two of the Triple Dipper, Black Gold, Texas Tea, Boomer eating donuts.
They're
we'll
good.
Be right back. Hey, all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right, covering some ground in the northern part of the state. I'm talking about down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi, thrown in just for good measure. All right, so we're back, number two of the Dipper, but we got
some text messages.
Oh, dang, we got
in
some
here.
Text that came in.
Yeah, we did. A few of them were about the push-ups.
Frick.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were a couple of them in here that they're going to blame me.
What? Blame you?
They're going to blame me if you don't get to all three Dippers today because you had to do your push-ups.
Well, hopefully it won't be for being out of breath. I'm good on that.
I hope.
What else is in there?
Let's see. JT from Lacey Springs, he said, well, since you did 50, can Boomer even do 50?
Boomer can do 50. I've seen Boomer do push-ups. He can knock out some push-ups. In fact, he's a lot younger than I am, so I feel confident.
I can knock out the 50.
You can knock out the 50.
I'd probably be huffing and puffing, too, though.
That's okay. You know what? Rightfully so. Okay, what else is in there? Daryl from Huntsville says, do the four count. No, Daryl, I'm not doing four count push-ups. I used to hate four count. I mean, I used to do them.
Ouch.
In the military. That was where basically it was one, two, three, one. All that basically was you were having to do it in stages. And sometimes they'd go one, and you had to hold it wherever they didn't count in. Two, up, three, down,
ooh,
four. And if they held you in the down position, they might hold you there for 30 seconds. You're just in the down holding. Ugh, ain't nothing fun about it.
No.
What else we got in there?
Let's see.
What was Bob from Madison saying? Be still and keep doing push-ups while he's eating donuts. I thought about it. I thought I was joking at one point. My legs were behind the desk. I could be on my knees just knocking these things out. Nobody would know.
Nobody could see it.
Yeah, but they would have seen it.
I would have moved the camera. Just
you would have called in my man card if I had done that. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, listen, lots of good stuff. Oh, by the way, Leanne from Huntsville, because that whole thing there was about the downloads for the podcast, she reminded me, she said she got her Right Side Ruffian shirt back when we were celebrating getting 500 downloads. Now
wow.
We're pushing 100,000.
That's pretty cool.
That is pretty cool, Leanne. Thanks for reminding us of that. To which I think your response was, dang, that's incredible. So that was Boomer that replied to you on the text line that time. Randall from Newmarket just finished saying to you, Boomer, you need to eat a donut for every push-up. No, man.
I don't think I could do that.
No, Randall, that's like bad for my man's health over there. I mean, I celebrate the donut. I don't celebrate the euthanasia by donut. That's just not a good idea.
I don't think I could eat that many.
All right. Wow. All right. Listen, hey, we're going to move to the next section of the Triple Dipper. Who was it that said we had to blame you if I didn't get my dippers done?
Oh, I need to look back and see, but it was somebody that they're going to blame me. So it was I don't know. We got so many texts.
Well,
it's so hard to
I know, it's hard to keep up. We have hundreds of people. By the way, if you have not experienced the text line with us, jump on. All right, the number is 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. That's also the call-in line. You can do that.
It was John from Huntsville.
John from Huntsville. Yeah. but yeah, call or text in. We'd love to hear what your thoughts are. I'm going to jump over to number two. All right. Black Gold, Texas Tea. Now, some of y'all are immediately in your mind singing the theme from the Beverly Hillbillies. Has anybody ever thought, how did he shoot a gun and strike oil? That's just amazing. I mean, that was running at almost like the surface level, but up through the ground came a bubbling crude. But yeah, Black Gold, Texas Tea. So here we are. You know, what's amazing to me is I was resourcing this section of the show. At one point, I was doing a search for stories on oil and gas industry news. It's amazing when you realize, oh, man, the talking points are out there. So it took forever to scroll past all of the Politico, Axios, and other stories that are determined to tell us that we never really were energy independent. No, that was a myth. Did you know that? That was a myth.
That was a myth?
Yeah.
Oh.
I mean, we were not a net exporter of oil. No. Mm. We were actually dependent upon other countries to make it work. That's such crap.
Yeah.
Let me tell you what's going to happen. So, first of all, story out on 1819 this morning that I didn't see until I'd already resourced the show for the day, points out that Governor Ivey just issued a grant for Alabama, another $2.5 million to help setting up the charging station infrastructure on major highways throughout the state for charging stations for electric vehicles. Okay, I get it. You know, I really don't, first of all, that's fine. Actually, it's not fine. Let me back up. I am not a fan of government subsidization of the industry. Tax credits, tax breaks are one thing. One-time incentives to help, you know, get a business to your area, I can sort of get it. But when you're literally having to underwrite the existence of a part of industry, then there's a problem. And the green energy sector is still to this day not capable of sustaining itself without government intervention. So right now, when you hear the Green New Deal, when you hear the Infrastructure Act, when you hear the Inflation Reduction Act, and all of the dollars being spent to bring us to a place of being green energy, you know, is the wave of the future, and we're on board now. Well, keep in mind, we didn't get there because the private sector invented the better mousetrap. We didn't. We got there because somebody had a neat idea, and government said, hey, we'll pay for that. I mean, meanwhile, you've got the private sector out there doing all it can to invent things that take us to the next level when it comes to industry and you know, technology. But yet, apparently the green energy sector can't survive unless government dollars are infused into it on a regular basis. So, while I don't mind at all that we're going to have charging stations throughout some of the major highways and byways of Alabama, I'm fine with that. I really am. I am bothered by the idea that it takes government grants to make it happen. If the private industry wants to build electric vehicles, great. Then the private industry should help figure out how to put charging stations in. And oh, by the way, put charging stations in that don't take you a half hour to get a charge on your vehicle so you can go another 150 miles. I mean, the very idea that we are on the verge of trying to convert our entire nation to something that actually has a term called range anxiety attached to it is galling to me. Remember that? Remember we did a segment on that a while back, range anxiety, remember that?
Oh, I remember it, and we talked about people having, like, you know, generators in the back of their car, and I think one guy even got pulled over.
Yes. He was running an experiment. He ran a generator that was charging his car while he was driving it to see how long he could go. Guess what? It was a gas-powered generator.
Gas-powered generator.
Yes. So range anxiety is apparently a new psychosis that accompanies the ownership of a electric vehicle, because if you want to go for a trip, I mean, like, okay, so Boomer and I right now, we're in the Gadsden area right now. If we want to, you know, go to Huntsville, go to Birmingham, go to Chattanooga, which, you know, we're right smack in the center of kind of all three, or Rome, Georgia. We're in that apex between all three. Any one of those could create range anxiety if you're driving an electric vehicle.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just went to Nashville this weekend. I'd probably have range anxiety going up there.
You'd have anxiety before you even got on the range. I mean,
exactly. Before I got to Bucky's.
And then what happens too if you come home at the end of the day, you're tired, and you pull in the garage or the driveway or whatever else, and you walk inside and you put your feet up and the day's over, and you forget that the next morning you've got to drive to Nashville or wherever, and you didn't charge your car overnight.
Oh.
Guess what? You're late.
Yeah, absolutely late.
So here's the thing. The grid right now can't sustain the amount of electric vehicle charging they're talking about putting in place anyway. And it's concerning to some who are actually paying attention. And I even had a caller call in once before that did an amazing job of explaining. And I've forgotten what his position was, but he's an engineer. I remember that. It explained the fact that literally, since the majority of North Alabama is on TVA and the bulk of TVA's power plants are coal-fired, that then to charge a vehicle requires coal burning just to charge the vehicle. And when you take into account the amount of charge that is drawn down by an electric vehicle for an overnight full charge, you're looking at having to burn X number of pounds of coal. I mean, it's sort of counterintuitive. And when you increase the load on the grid by increasing the number of electric vehicles, which are charging overnight, which is typically the point when the grid is able to settle and not have as much draw on it, well, okay, you've just created a thing that we didn't have before. You now have massive load coming down at night on a coal-burning grid. Doesn't that seem counterintuitive? Switzerland, you ready for this? Fox News reports as of yesterday. Switzerland could ban electric vehicles from being used non-essentially this winter as government officials begin to brace for an energy crisis during the winter months. The Telegraph reported on Saturday Swiss officials have drafted emergency proposals that restrict power usage if things get bad this winter. For example, shops might have to reduce their hours, streaming services may need to be limited, buildings may only be heated to 20 degrees Celsius, which is 68 degrees Fahrenheit. Other bans would be things like concerts, theater performances, sporting events. They're going to have a tiered grid, crisis and emergency, and then three levels within each of those tiers. And as things intensify, it says, one of the things on the list is that electric vehicles would have to be limited to essential trips in order to reduce the burden on the grid. So you're already seeing the Green New Deal in Europe being called into question because they don't know if they can sustain it. We just saw recently, there was a story I had on the show not long ago, that in California, the grid cannot sustain the level of charge that they're looking at, and they're already asking people not to charge their vehicles to the full extent during peak hours. Wow. Okay, with that being said, I'm not against electric vehicles. I'm not. You want to drive, your EV, your Tesla, your Leaf, your whatever. Okay. But understand this. It's happening at the expense of a grid that is currently not prepared for it. It's happening at a time when government is having to basically underwrite the ability to put charging stations in. And none of it makes full sense yet, and yet we're being shoved into it at a pace that is beyond what we're ready for, in my opinion. I am not an electrical engineer. I did not sleep at a Holiday Inn Express last night. But I'm looking at some of the energy policies coming out of this administration, and I'm wondering what in God's name is happening. So when we come right back, having laid all that as the foundation, we're going to jump right in to black gold Texas tea, because what we do have right now is the ability to be energy independent while we build out the EV structure. But it's as if the Biden administration is cutting off its nose to spite its face. And I got some oil industry news you're going to want to hear about what industry execs are saying about Biden's energy policies and what they think should or should not be done. Let's take the break, Boomer. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Jumping in the number two of the triple dipper here, black gold, Texas tea. So, and by the way, I just had a text from JT from Lacey Springs says, hey, Texas tea trivia, where did Jed strike oil? Okay. My recollection, JT, was that he was hunting near an oil-rich swamp. And I feel like it was in Kentucky. I could be wrong. I know he was in the mountains. He was a mountaineer. Text it in, JT. If I'm wrong, I thought it was Kentucky. Anyway, we'll see. Listen, we got some new listeners on the line. We got Navy Phil. And we don't know where he's from yet. He's going to tell us. But Navy Phil, we're glad you're here. Thanks for your service. I know we had another one earlier, too. Didn't we have another one?
We had a couple new ones. Actually come in today. There's just new people every day. I love it.
Yeah, well, we appreciate it. And yes. The texts have already been going so fast, they're burying other texts. All right, so listen, I laid the groundwork on some of the issues we're seeing with the electric vehicle industry not yet being ready for a complete rollout. And granted, I know they've got a 10-year plan, But there's a lot to be done in 10 years. In the meantime, the Biden administration and the current leftists within the, that have the ear of the Biden administration are doing everything they can to shut down the current oil and gas industry, which has made America what it is today. And, oh, by the way, is the way you don't have to have range anxiety when you go on the road. I mean, Charlene and I just drove to see family in Michigan recently. And that's a 12-hour drive. That's not going to happen if we're driving an EV. This is not. Fox Business has a story dated December 2nd, so what, 3 days ago. As the Strategic Petroleum Reserve falls to dangerously low levels, American Petroleum Institute President and CEO Mike Summers issued a warning to the Biden administration that a negligent plan to restore it could trigger another economically painful oil crisis. What he's saying basically is, you've been draining our Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and you're doing it for all the wrong reasons. And oh, by the way, you don't seem to have a plan for how you're going to refill it. That's a great point. So the Strategic Petroleum, this is a quote, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve unfortunately has become the Strategic Political Reserve. He said, we have grave concerns about how it is being so politicized. This is for emergency purposes, not to lower gasoline prices during a political season, Summers said on Friday morning, talking on Mornings with Maria. Maria Bartiromo, I guess. But I think doing this willy-nilly, he said, and doing it in a way that doesn't make sense for the market we're in, we could be dealing with another major oil crisis here in the next few weeks. He said, we're also real concerned, Maria, about how low it's gone. It's the lowest level since 1984, not necessarily because of market conditions, but because of political concerns. All right, so even still, you look at it and go, okay, what? So are we just missing something here? Because the press conference that the Pentagon spokesman John Kirby held the other day, he flat out said, well, the president's issued 9,000 permits for drilling on federal lands. There's plenty of opportunities for oil and gas companies to drill, to which the same guy I was talking about a moment ago, CEO Mike Summers of the American Petroleum Institute said, here's his quote to that. He said, that is such a myth. It's been debunked multiple times. The administration continues to use it. They make it seem like as soon as you get a lease, you can start drilling. That would not be the environmentally sound thing to do. You have to do a lot of prep work before you actually produce on those federal leases, including getting multiple permits, which, by the way, are being slow-rolled very often. This is me talking now, in the halls of the Department of Energy. So, yeah, he says that the administration ought to stop talking about these false statistics and instead get these permits approved. So there's that. Well, in the meantime, while we're draining our Strategic Petroleum Reserve, and while we're literally claiming that they can drill on federal lands, but at the same time, we've made it hard because we put a moratorium. I say we. Biden put a moratorium on the drilling of offshore leases and on federal lands. He's beginning to sort of move back to that, but he's put them in a position where, number one, they have to look at their bottom line. They have a duty to shareholders. Do we invest in something that they say they want to shut down? Because right now you got Biden out there going, we're going to shut down coal. And oh, by the way, we're going to clean up the economy and move everybody to EV within the next 10 to 20 years. When you do stuff like that, the guys who run the oil and gas companies go, do we invest the billions in drilling right now? What's our market look like? So that's all happening on this side. Guess what's happening elsewhere? Suddenly Venezuela, Venezuela, that socialistic country that's got an unstable dictatorship that we have sanctioned multiple times in recent years. Guess what? We can get their oil again. Isn't that cool? Well, oilprice.com, I got all the resources for the show. Oilprice.com, the owner of Continental Resources, and one of the faces of the shale revolution is a guy named Harold Hamm. He has criticized the Biden administration's decision to grant sanction relief to Chevron so it can restart operations in Venezuela. Yeah, so in the middle of the crisis, all of a sudden Biden goes, Venezuela, you bunch of socialists that are struggling to fund your government, we'll help you fund your socialism if you'll drill oil so we can buy from you, even though, you know, we don't want to drill our own. Calling the deal a sign of desperation per a Financial Times report, Hamm went on to blame the administration for killing the U.S. oil industry. He said, this is a Venezuelan deal. It's a good example, he says, of the desperation this administration is dealing with. They know what they did. They took the federal lands off the table. They know better, and shame on them. They want to put oil and gas out of business. And then he goes on to say also, when you look at Venezuelan oil, though, understand it can't make diesel from it. He said you can't make it out of tar, and he says that Venezuelan oil is filled with tar, and therefore we're looking at still having issues even with Venezuelan oil. I'll tell you more about that in a minute. We'll come right back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, Black Gold, Texas Tea. Right Side Ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Hour number three, the local, the state, the national, man, we cover down on all of the issues. And like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, I want to thank my son for sending in about my push-ups a moment ago. There's an old thing in the military, if you're doing your PT test and you drop down to do your push-ups, and they don't like them, they just don't count them. So they'll start going, one, one, one. So my son sends me a text, and all he says is, one, one, one. Damn it. He had no respect.
Man. Yeah. Hey, can you believe he did that?
Doesn't that boy know who?
Dadgummit.
But, yeah, we I'll take it. By the way, I ate a donut during the break, and that was a mighty fine donut, brother.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, pretty damn good.
Just passing them around. I got to share the love.
But you got family coming tonight to the house. I too know.
Yes.
But you,
so they'll enjoy the
you'll
rest.
You'll take the rest of them. Hey, you make sure my adopted nephew gets one.
Oh, of course. All right. He probably will take the box and run away.
Tell him Uncle Phil sent those.
Oh, he'll love that.
All right. Hey, I'm back in number two of the Triple Dipper, Black Gold, Texas Tea. So, oil industry executives, according to Fox Business Storyline, December 2nd, oil industry executives have really just come out hard against the Biden administration here recently. The first story that I read you a while ago dealt specifically with the lowering of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, with the fact that the Biden administration is trying to say, well, they can drill on, we lifted the moratorium. We've authorized like 9,000 leases on federal lands. Yeah, but you held them for how long? And we still have to go through the permitting process, which you've made torturously painful. And just because you say we've got a lease now, that's like saying that, okay, we've got ground we can build a house on now, but the house doesn't go up in one day. Harold Hamm is the guy who is the owner of Continental Resources. I started to say right before the break that he is literally one of the faces of the whole shale oil revolution. You know, the ability to do, I guess, fracking and extract oil from shale. He calls the fact that we just entered into a sanctions relief deal with Venezuela a complete sign of desperation. And he says literally that the Biden administration ought to be ashamed. Well, here's a story from CNN on that. So there's no good way to spin this. I mean, the Biden administration is literally just, they're lifting sanctions and dealing with people that are bad actors so they can avoid having to do what we need done here at home and, you know, and create an opportunity for the United States. So CNN reports as of December 2nd, the Venezuelan government and American oil company Chevron have signed a contract in Caracas on Friday to resume operations in Venezuela. Now, Chevron has been there for a long time, but there's been a moratorium on drilling in Venezuela due to sanctions because of their, you know, humanitarian crises and socialist tendencies and anti-American rhetoric. Anyway, this contract aims, it says, quote here, this contract aims to continue with the productive and development activities in the energy sector framed within our Constitution and the Venezuelan laws that govern oil activity in the country, said Venezuelan oil minister Tariq Al-Assemi, the same person who was slapped, that person was slapped with U.S. sanctions in 2017. Yeah. Yeah, so Tariq Al-Assemi, the same person who we personally sanctioned in 2017, attended the signing ceremony along with representatives from Venezuelan state-owned oil and natural gas company PDVSA and Chevron. The move, it says, comes after the United States granted Chevron limited authorization to resume pumping oil, following an announcement that the Venezuelan government and the opposition group had reached an agreement on humanitarian relief and will continue to negotiate for a solution to the country's chronic economic and political crises. Oh, by the way, how about you also, Venezuela, stop opening up your prisons and sending all your released prisoners to our southern border? That'd be nice. How about that? That'd be an amazing thing. But in the meantime, we'll deal with it because we don't want to drill our own oil. We want you to do it. Well, so here's another fairly new development. This is a November story from The Guardian. By the way, I even wrote it on my notes. You can see it here on the screen right now. When I highlight these things and make notes on it, I actually literally wrote liberal at the top of this one just to remind myself what I had in my hand. The Guardian has an article from November, and it says, here's the headline, oil and gas firms planning frightening fossil fuels growth. You see what we're up against here? Oil and gas companies, it says, are planning a frightening expansion that would result in 115 billion tons of climate heating CO2 being pumped out, equivalent to more than 24 years of U.S. emissions, a new analysis has found. This is the equivalent of the sky is falling, the sky is falling. That's what you're seeing here. Virtually all oil and gas companies, it says, are planning further exploitation of fossil fuels because, let me just make sure y'all understand, that's what oil and gas companies do. As they exploit fossil fuels. They exist for the sole purpose of providing profit to their shareholders by drilling for oil. The report found that there's an effort to pour almost $160 billion into future exploration since 2020. None of the investment, here we go, you ready? None of this investment is compatible with the International Energy Agency's route to reaching zero or net zero emissions by 2050. Because that's what matters to the average American citizen. Hey, I've got to get to work. I need to stop and get gas before I run late. Wait, I don't know if I should do this or not. Does this help the IAE or the IEA's efforts to reach net zero across the world, limiting the climate crisis? So at the recent COP27 conference, the climate summit they had in Egypt, leaders were warned that deep and rapid cuts to carbon emissions are needed to avoid climate catastrophe. Because if you remember, it was acid rain in the 70s. And then the polar bears were sailing away in the distance on broken off icebergs in the 80s and early 90s. And then now global warming has taken over where, you know, we used to have that. And then it changed into climate change. Because that way they can use that kind of amorphous title to add anything they wanted to it. So the COP27 conference, leaders have been warned that deep and rapid cuts to carbon emissions are needed to avoid climate catastrophe. Climate catastrophe! But the analysis found that 655 of 685, that's 96%, of the exploration and production companies have expansion plans. Oh, no. Do you mean to tell me that a private sector industry, which is existing to make a profit with the purpose of exploring for oil and gas, plans to actually explore for oil and gas and maybe do the best job they can? Dang. Oh, the humanity. The IEA, that's the International Energy Agency, which we could care less about, said in 2021 that no new fossil fuel projects could go ahead from 2022 if the world is to tackle global heating and its worsening impacts on billions of people. What they're literally saying, folks, just to go ahead and break it down for you, is they went to this. They all flew, by the way. They all flew to the conference in Egypt, just so you know. They all flew to the conference in Egypt and probably had to run the air conditioning in the buildings they were in. And I'm sure they ate well on food that was cooked over gas stoves. But nonetheless, while they were there, with a straight face, it was said, we cannot allow any future fossil fuel projects to go past the year 2022. Otherwise, we're not going to reach net zero. What the heck? What do they think is going to happen? So here it goes on, and I'll kind of wrap this one up. Ergovald's analysis is based on a company-level database that covers the companies accountable for 95% of the oil and gas production. The data allows assessment of whether a company's activities are in line with the IEA's net zero emissions scenarios. The companies don't exist to please the IEA. This is what happens when you get into ESG mode. This is what happens when companies are told to stop making a profit and start doing things that the liberal activists say should be done. Hey, you shouldn't be out there making a profit, you silly corporate manager. You should be doing what we say, which is, I don't know, using your corporate wealth to do good progressive things. Anyway, that's what ESG is for. And it ends with Katrine Gonsvelt at Ergovald saying, the oil and gas companies are betting against our collective future. No, they're not. They're making sure our future stays active and mobile. That's what they're doing. They're making sure people can heat their homes. And by the way, they're making sure that they make a profit in the process, which is the way America grew in the first place. All right, a little more on this when we get back. Taking a break right now. Coming back from it to wrap this thing up. And then we'll move into the last one because I believe, Boomer, I'm feeling good after my push-ups, man. I believe we're going to hit all three dippers today.
All right. I can't blame me.
All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Solid conservative, just plain right. Hey, by the way, I had one of our listeners sent me a Facebook image of the womlet he got this weekend at Just Love Coffee Cafe, which looked pretty daggum good, I'll be honest. And he said he literally was thinking, what am I going to do for breakfast? And he remembered hearing it on the show and sent back the picture of the womlet and then the picture of his empty plate afterwards and said, awesome. So let me just tell you, Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations in our listening area, one on Hughes Road in Madison, the other on South Parkway in Huntsville. You need to stop by and check out the menu because do they have coffee? Oh, yeah, award-winning coffees, great ones. I mean, they got all of what Charlene calls the treat coffees and, you know, the lattes, espressos, cappuccinos, but they've also got award-winning dry roast. They can grind the beans fresh, make you a steaming cup of black coffee. Take a breakfast, take a lunch, take an afternoon break. Just go by and hang out, but the menu there is also incredible. Sandwiches, wraps, salads, waffles, omelets called womlets. They cook in a waffle iron. I mean, it's all just so good. Check them out. Just Love Coffee Cafe, two locations, Hughes Road in Madison, South Parkway in Huntsville. And tell them you heard about it on Right Side Radio. I love that. All right, I got somebody held on during the break, so let me grab that line real quick. Line one, Alan from Hartsell. Alan, how you doing today?
I'm upright and breathing, just like I told Boomer.
Well, good. Glad of it.
Yeah. There's a whole lot of things in this oil business. I was worked with Exxon for roughly 11 years, and I left, got out of it back in the 80s. But this is nothing new. The oil that was coming out of Alaska ended up in China, Japan, and South Korea.
Wow.
Okay. The oil, and now the great state of California says they're going to put a stop to this. Well, they were one of the only two refineries that could handle that oil that could have made them independent. No, we can't have that. It might mess up our beaches. So now the state legislature, we're going to force oil companies to comply to our rules. But now Exxon, Chevron, and Texaco all comes from the same loading facilities in Birmingham, Alabama. Same company. Only thing is you bill each one differently. But it's the same stuff.
Huh.
It's like a lot of other oil companies, they don't even have facilities. to refine. And all of a sudden, they said, wait a minute. We can't let that be known. Now you're going to, and then he said he has all these oil permits to be drilled.
Yeah.
You're going to spend several million dollars to drill an oil well that might work and might not, might be functional. But they put so many restrictions on it, there's no way you can afford it not producing.
Yeah.
Now that stuff from Venezuela, guess what? Sitco went out of business because they were taken over by government in Venezuela.
Yeah.
Sitco doesn't exist anymore. Now we're going to go right back and deal with the same bunch of communists the same way, and this man is draining the oil reserves. What's going to happen if there's no oil left in for the military? What's going to happen?
I totally agree.
They're going to walk right in.
Alan, go ahead.
I was saying, I'm just a dumb transport driver and oil worker. I say oil worker. The oil refinery man used to come in every 2 weeks. We'd sit down and have a little discussion. It didn't exist. That company doesn't exist anymore. It went under.
Yep.
So these government folks that say that they've got the answers, I want them to build these wind turbine stuff in Biden's backyard because it's not going to work. It'll never work. And they keep saying, well, we need it to be a world economy. Well, if everybody's broke, how good is the economy?
That's a great point. Alan, got to run before I run out of time, man. Thanks so much for the call. Yeah, that's spot on. And by the way, I'm pretty sure that you were smarter than most of the executives you worked with. But you have a good one, man. Have a great day.
You too, bud.
All right, take care. He's right though, and he's talking about the restrictions they put on it. And by the way, refining capability is not where it needs to be in the United States. So it's not just a matter of getting it out of the ground; you still got to refine it for use. And then you look at so the Biden administration a moment ago, I talked about the fact that we've got literally a moratorium placed on the leases on federal lands. Now they've begun to lighten up on that. And now they're wanting to go, why aren't you drilling? Well, it doesn't work that way overnight. And then Alan made a great point a moment ago. And the restrictions they put on them, the burdens they put on them, wind up impeding the capabilities of the oil and gas companies to provide, and they're the ones getting fussed at. Here's a story off of NBC News. NBC News. One more example of what comes out of things like the COP27 conference. The Biden administration in November announced plans to significantly tighten regulations against methane emissions from domestic oil and gas drilling. So here's what they're doing. They're basically changing they're moving the goalposts. The Environmental Protection Agency said the proposed standards would reduce methane from the oil and gas sector by 87%. The United States is once again a global leader in confronting the climate crisis. We must lead by example when it comes to tackling methane pollution, one of the biggest drivers of climate change, said EPA Administrator Michael Regan. The strengthened regulations call for companies to reduce emissions from gas flaring and establish a, quote, super emitter response program that allows federal regulators and approved third parties to quickly identify and respond to major. You know, I get it. I'm okay with making it cleaner. I'm okay with being a good steward of our environment. I'm okay with it. But don't try and, I'm about to use a crude analogy from the military. I won't use it. The bottom line is this. Don't tell me one thing and do another. Don't try and pretend that you're trying to keep the economy alive when you know for a fact you're shutting down a whole sector of it. Don't try to pretend that we're ready for EVs because we're not. And in the meantime, if you want to bring EVs online, don't shut down the oil and gas industry while you do. Make the private sector compete for the better mousetrap and bring it all together in a way that benefits the consumer and profits the corporations. That's the way capitalism works. And what we're seeing right now is a government-subsidized push to crush one industry in favor of another and even fund the other, all at the expense of Joe and Jane Citizen. And that's maddening. All right, that's the end of Dipper number 2 of Black Gold Texas Tea. Coming up next, Musk on a Roll. That sounds like something we eat for breakfast. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
all you Right Side ruffians out there, you are listening to Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama. Man, I'm talking about down south of Birmingham, up north of Huntsville, Tuscaloosa, back over to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and Mississippi thrown in just for good measure. By the way, if you are one of our listeners in Georgia, it's voting day tomorrow. Man, I'm going to tell you right now, if we cannot see Raphael Warnock walk into the Senate, just walk right in. It can't happen. God, that guy's just a cartoon. Listen. If you have not voted, they're saying that the weather could be rainy tomorrow and that could impact turnout. Right now, it's believed that high turnout tomorrow means good things for Herschel Walker because Republicans tend to be more leery of early voting and show up on voting day as opposed to Democrats who, for some reason, glom onto the idea of early voting. And they've been piling in record numbers, and we don't know the results, but the sense is that early voting is more beneficial to Warnock. So, folks, we got to turn out tomorrow. And I want to encourage you, if you're a Georgia resident and you haven't voted, tomorrow's the day. You got to go and get her done, all right? Hey, I got to also tell you, too, real quick, ZLA Solutions, one of our original sponsors, has been with us since the day the show started. ZLA Solutions is like epic good at getting people and jobs lined up. If you're looking for a job, and we know for a fact, by the way, by our labor participation rate, there's a lot of folks who got out of the labor force. Maybe some of y'all are thinking about getting in, or maybe some of y'all out there are just looking for something different than what you're doing. ZLA Solutions has great jobs posted all over North Alabama, big-name employers. They can take care of you. But they're also, by the way, if you're an employer looking to fill out the ranks of your workforce, well, man, that's one of their bread-and-butter items. They put people and jobs together on a regular basis. If you need onesies and twosies, niche skills, or you want to fill out an entire shift of people to work the line at a factory or whatever, blue collar, white collar, no collar, it don't matter. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. That's what they do. So check them out. ZLA Solutions at ZLAUSA.com. All right. Boomer, you've been keeping up with the Elon Musk saga and what's going on at Twitter?
Oh, man. There's been a lot.
It's like a daily rollout.
Daily. So, I mean, sometimes hourly. You don't even know what he's going to throw out there next.
So did you see this weekend how he did a document dump of things that had been suppressed in the 2020 election season?
Yes. I didn't get to go through them, but I did see that.
Yeah. So for those of y'all that don't know, here's the deal. And just reminding you, so Elon Musk buys Twitter. Twitter was notorious. I was in Twitter lockout multiple times. I got sent to the penalty box for, I don't know, infractions of something that a liberal didn't like. Well, Twitter was suppressing things in a big way, not the least of which, probably one of the biggest ones of all, when the Hunter Biden laptop story broke, Twitter decided to suppress the story, and it was the New York Post that broke the story, and Twitter even took down their entire Twitter account. They were not allowed to move the story forward. And we have every reason to believe that the other big techs jumped in with this as well. Elon Musk buys Twitter and decides he's going to go ahead and open all the drawers, look in the file cabinets, open the closets, and he's going to wind up telling the world what he finds. He's been going through inboxes and emails, and I'll tell you, brother, it's been something else. So the first document dump came out, I think it was Friday, and I believe some more came out Saturday. And what he's done is he's turned all these over to a couple of intrepid investigative reporters and given them the opportunity to create the story. And they're creating them off of facts. Well, story I've got here on Fox Business, by the way, dated yesterday. Elon Musk says the Constitution is greater than any president. I'm going to come back to that in a moment. Another one from the Epoch Times dated yesterday. Elon Musk says, in the wake of all these revelations, if I commit suicide, it's not real. What does that mean? Well, what that means is he was joking about the fact that given all the revelations in the files, with more to come, by the way, he's out there right now today saying more smoking guns are coming. That if with all that he's been revealing, that there are powerful figures and institutions that may want him out of the way, his words, I don't have any suicidal thoughts. If I commit suicide, it's not real. So the series of internal Twitter communications, according to the Epoch Times, released by Musk's new leadership of Twitter and independent journalist Matt Taibbi on Friday, unveiled communications showing how former Twitter executives censored reports about Hunter Biden's infamous laptop in the lead-up to the 2020 presidential election. Musk said earlier in the week this amounted to election interference. Now, they're going to say, we're a private company. We can moderate our own content. Well, listen, no. When you know for a fact, Pew Institute says 71% of all Americans get their news off of Twitter. And oh, by the way, the world looks at Twitter. And oh, by the way, experts will tell you that the modern public square is social media. And when a company chooses to limit the capacity of a story to get out because it might have an influence upon one side or the other in the political spectrum, that suppression then becomes very questionable. Legal? I don't know yet. Ethical? Certainly not. But here's the other piece of this. What we're also finding is that the Biden campaign, and perhaps even the subsequent Biden administration, has been coordinating with Twitter to suppress the things they don't want said. We're going to find out more about that in days to come. I think the most damning thing we're going to find is not that they hosed around with, you know, not liking, you know, conservative thought. I think what we're going to see is the connectivity between the Biden team and the Twitter execs who did things that benefited the Biden team. And then when Biden took office, if it continued, and we see that, at that point we literally have government combining its forces with big tech to limit information to the citizens. And that, ladies and gentlemen, may be an impeachable offense. That is limiting the public discourse, determining what they do and don't want people to hear, say, or understand for the sole reason of benefiting their agenda. And when they do that, when they go down that road, they have created the whole George Orwell 1984 scenario where Big Brother is allowed to govern thought. And that is a dangerous place to be. Well, you know, at the same time, I look at it and think, okay, let's don't hose ourselves in this, all right, Republicans? Let's make sure we stay on task. Let's make sure we find out what needs to be found out. Let's push it forward, and let's go ahead and not shoot ourselves in the foot. And yet President Trump, and some would disagree with me, they already have on Twitter, I know, but some would disagree with me on this, but President Trump came out with a post on his own Truth Social platform where when all these revelations were coming out, story here on Fox Business. The quote from Trump was, so with the revelation of, all caps, massive and widespread fraud and deception, which I'm not arguing with, it was there, in working closely with big tech companies, the DNC, the Democrat Party, do you throw the presidential election results of 2020 out and declare the rightful winner, or do you have a new election? And he went on to say, a massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. Our great founders did not want and would not condone false and fraudulent elections. Sir, we don't change the Constitution, Mr. President. We don't change the Constitution. The Constitution was not the one at fault here. It was the people who, you don't throw out the rules, the regulations, and articles found in the Constitution. You don't get to go back and say, we're going to go back and change 2020 and throw out the current president. I don't like the fact that he's president. But we don't have the luxury, sir, of saying, I don't like the Constitution today, so I'm going to do away with it. That's like people who say, scripture is inconvenient to me today, so I intend to go ahead and do what I want. Tomorrow I'll go to church and make up for it. No, you don't get that luxury. It is or it ain't. And on Sunday, Musk chimed in saying simply in one tweet, the Constitution is greater than any president. End of story. I got to tell you, and by the way, don't mistake Elon Musk for a conservative. He is right on this point. He's wrong on some others. But he is absolutely right on this point. And I am so glad he's out there pushing to get to where, you know, we can get back to the public discourse. In a Twitter town hall, He was asked a number of questions, Musk was. Is there any way you get a sneak peek of what we expect with the next Twitter files drop? And then Musk replied, well, I'm leaving that up to Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss. Those are the two reporters he's given the information to. I think the natural thing would be to say, like, okay, what happened after the election? You know, the Hunter Biden laptop stuff. This may sound bizarre, but Hunter Biden sounds kind of fun, to be honest. Okay. What we're going to wind up seeing here, though, is apparently in the coming days, the next round of Twitter files to drop. He says, when asked about the next round of Twitter files to drop, he said, there are more smoking guns. Episode 2, he says, would cover information after the 2020 presidential election. I think we're going to find out that in an effort to keep the president's son out of harm's way, in an effort to keep people from talking about COVID solutions that didn't fit the narrative, in an effort to try and smooth things over after the Afghanistan debacle, I think we're going to find that the Biden administration was working with Twitter on a daily basis to make sure the narratives were shaped the way they wanted them shaped, which is absolutely not supposed to be happening. It's one thing to have a press secretary that issues a release that people pick up and deal with. It's altogether another to sit down and collude with how the story should be presented. And not allow, by the way, not allow dissenting opinion. Absolutely wrong. By the way, Fox Business points out, too, that at first, you know, we were seeing people, corporations were, you know, going, you know, in their woke directions and bailing on Twitter advertising. Elon Musk on Saturday thanked advertisers for returning to Twitter after multiple reports said that big name companies like Apple and Amazon would resume advertising. Just a note to thank the advertisers for returning to Twitter, Musk tweeted without elaborating. The tweet followed a report from the tech outlet Platformer that Amazon will return to advertising on Twitter in the near future and plans to spend $100 million on the platform annually. Boomer, I will go ahead and say that if they'd like to spend 10% of that at Right Side Radio, we'll take it.
Yeah, that'd be great.
we'll buy all the donuts we want then, man.
Exactly. We'll share with everybody.
All right, brother. Take us to a break. Take us to the last break of the day. We'll do that right now. We'll come right back and wrap this up. It's interesting when you look at what was being said about Twitter during the time when all the suppression was going on. Were there any Democrats that were not in favor of it and questioning Twitter? Just one. I'll tell you who when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just plain right. Well, I'm not even going to be able to get to all the stuff I had resources for on this segment about Musk on a roll, but I got a couple of the main ones that I do want to point out. So first of all, what's interesting to me, a story here on townhall.com. Townhall.com talks about how once all these bombshell releases came out, and by the way, make no mistake, they're getting deeper. And there's so much there that as you unpack it, it's almost like you find threads. You have to pull that thread, and you keep finding more. And I'm just telling you, folks, this whole thing at Twitter is going to wind up having impacts that trickle down into Facebook and Google, and you're going to wind up seeing how other platforms, I guarantee you, somewhere in there you're going to wind up seeing that there's a reference to a meeting. This is me predicting, all right? This is me predicting. I predict that at some point soon there will be an email, a document, something that indicates that not only was the Biden administration and or the Biden campaign coordinating with Twitter, but there were ongoing meetings that also involved other tech platforms. Maybe it's already out there and I missed the story. But truth be told, I do believe you're going to wind up seeing that Twitter was not alone in this, all right? But when you look at this, you think, okay, Democrats, don't y'all understand the level to which you're going right now is going to be found out one day? And is it just the means justifies the ends, or the ends justify the means? Or which one is it? Well, so here's the deal. In all the documents being reviewed, one of the reporters who's got the information right now, who's creating the stories, is Matt Taibbi. He's one of the two that's been given all of this. Matt Taibbi and Barry Weiss been given this by Elon Musk and the opportunity to develop stories. In reviewing all the documents, has only found one Democrat congressman who expressed concerns and did so pretty well. Representative Ro Khanna reportedly emailed Vijaya Gadde, who is the former general counsel and head of the legal policy and trust at Twitter, saying that Twitter's policies did not align with what they were doing. Rolling Stone contributing editor Matt Taibbi posted a series or a thread of tweets with Elon Musk called the Twitter Files, noting that Gadde had received them but ultimately ignored them. Here's what he said. Democrat Congressman Ro Khanna reached out to Gadde to gently suggest she hop on the phone to talk about the backlash regarding speech, meaning free speech. Khanna was the only Democrat official I could find in the files who expressed concern. And it goes on to say that Khanna appeared to be very concerned with the First Amendment being suppressed, even though, in his own words, he was a Biden partisan. Here's the quote in one of the emails. I say this as a total Biden partisan and convinced he didn't do anything wrong, Khanna wrote, but the story has become more about censorship than relatively innocuous emails, and it's becoming a bigger deal than it should have been. Putting the laptop story aside, Khanna noted that ethically, journalists have a right to publish information. He said, if there's a hack of classified info or other information that could expose a serious war crimes and the New York Times was to publish it, the New York Times would have that right. A journalist should not be held accountable for the illegal actions of the source unless they actively aided the hack. So what he's basically saying there is the FBI portrayed, apparently, to Twitter, hey, this whole thing about, you know, a laptop, even though they had it in their hands for a year, this whole thing about a laptop and what's on it, you know, we think it may have come through a hack. So keep that in mind. It's a bad story, man. It had a hack. No, it didn't. It was dropped off to a computer repairman who, as he's accessing the hard drive to do what he was asked to do, starts finding all of these egregious files. And then the laptop's abandoned by Hunter Biden, just abandoned. And he's like, what do I do with this thing? It's filled with crimes. So he gave it to the FBI. And they sat on it and did nothing. And then when the story began to break, the FBI went and told Twitter, and we believe the other platforms, yeah, that information may have come through a hack, so keep that in mind. It could be an illicit source. Well, what the frick? So Ro Khanna says, that doesn't stop you from reporting on a story, unless you're the ones who participated in the hack. I mean, Lord, look what happened when, what took down Governor Bentley here in Alabama? It was somebody having access to files that were in his computer who turned them over, where he was texting back and forth with, you know, a female staffer. Guess what? They reported on it quite a bit. But how about this? As this develops, suddenly the Federal Elections Commission, story from Red State as of yesterday, suddenly the Federal Elections Commission is looking over some of the exposed communications and notes some items of interest. They cannot help but notice that the internal communications do show how the Biden campaign and DNC officials seem to have a direct line of communication within Twitter and that actions were being taken on the platform at the request or command of Biden's handlers. Huh. Thing, it clearly displayed that there was a relationship between Twitter and the Democrats, a connection that had not only been suspected, but had also been brought to the FEC as an issue, which, by the way, the Democrats denied at the time. Here's the deal. It reminds us in the story from Red State. The Tea Party Patriots filed a complaint with the FEC saying that Hunter Biden's laptop story being stifled by Twitter amounted to a in-kind contribution to the Biden campaign. In the course of denying that, literally, Twitter said that wasn't happening and that there were no coordinations. And now we're finding emails saying clearly that there were. Wow. All right, listen, it's going to get deeper from there. Y'all keep your eyes on this because this story is going to morph, develop, and get legs over the coming days. All right, well, sitting here in the studio with a box of donuts and a new Christmas tree, that's been a good show, man.
Great show.
Great show.
Absolutely.
And I hope you enjoyed your donuts.
They were delicious. They were delicious. Now everybody just go listen to some podcast.
That's right.
Get those numbers up.
Get those numbers up so Boomer's not doing push-ups here within the next, 5 days? 5 days to hit 100,000.
That's right.
All right, folks. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. You guys have an amazing night. We'll see you soon. Right Side Ruffians out there. You are listening to Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right.